This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
The board and the station face every day. I encourage you to contact me either by email at bswain2000@yahoo.com or by phone at 713-436-2714 to share your questions and concerns about the future of the station. I'm Brian Swain, and I sincerely appreciate your support.
This is 90.1 KPFT, Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Walensky.
And Jennifer Renee.
And this evening, we have a number of local interviews, including the Pride Band is going to be here talking about what's coming up and some of their Spooked On classics, which is going to be on October 19th. It is a fundraiser for his sisters. Then also, J.D. Doyle.
I will talk to the Women's Festival people because the festival is this Saturday, and we want to know more about what's going on with it.
And then Aaron Coleman is going to be talking to us. Now, we also must preface this with the weather.
The weather.
Because we all made it here, but we're not sure. I know the Pride Band is here, and then Ellie has an interview she's going to be doing on the phone.
And Aaron's going to phone his in because he won't be able to make it here.
So that's what we have scheduled tonight, and we'll see how it all works out, depending on who could make it. And, in fact, we're also dealing with the This Way Out problem that wasn't downloaded like it was supposed to be. But this is KPFT, and we're used to this, and we tap dance like we usually do.
Which will make it an especially good show. At least an adventure.
And sometimes those are the best shows.
Yes, they are.
A couple of announcements. Monday we start early voting.
Yes, we do.
And that will be, I think it's like 9 to 5 for the first 4 or 5 days, and then it goes 7 to 7. So we encourage you to go out and vote because it's very, very important. The Ellen Coleman, Martha Wong debate was last Wednesday at Rice, and there's other ones going on too, and that was it was very professionally done.
It really was. I enjoyed it. I've only been to a few live debates like that, but I think it was handled professionally, and the candidates did well. I thought the answers were somewhat political, but occasionally we got a straight answer, which was almost like a delight.
Politicians?
Yes, well, you know, every once in a while, I guess I hold out hope that someday they'll just be honest with us.
And then, of course, this Saturday is a women's festival.
Yes, indeed, at the Jones Plaza, and there's a number of artists we'll be talking about. You'll be hearing some of those a little later in the show.
Okay, but first we have some music from the Pride Band.
Yes, we do. We set up for music. Go. This is JD, and that is the Pride Band. And here with us tonight, we have Kyler Landry. He says he's the voice of the band.
I didn't know bands had voices.
Well, yeah, I thought the best thing we can have is voices.
Okay.
Kind of short notice, I'm here. We're having a wonderful concert, spooked on classics, so as you can kind of tell by the theme, it's going to be classical music that you can associate with a Halloween-type, October-ish feel to it. Something that, you know, you if you think of it's kind of spooky and creepy with classical music.
Lots of Wagner?
This is creepy without it being October.
Well, if you hear us play sometimes, it sounds kind of creepy, too.
So how did you find these Halloween classics?
Well, we have a lot of very bright musicians who have just years of background in music, and we kind of collaborate between the members themselves along with our artistic director, and they come up with a selection of pieces that we have. They selected some pieces such as, and we're going from things that are real noticeable to some things that they may not notice. First half of our concert includes things such as selections from the Harry Potter movies. Kind of gives it a weird October-ish, Halloween-ish thing. We have also Little Shop of Horrors. Everyone knows that.
Oh, I love that.
So, I mean, it kind of gives you a little weird vibe, Halloween-ish, October-ish thing. Then we go to selections such as selections from Carmina Burana. So, I mean, it's...
Any Rocky Horror Picture Show?
Not this year.
Oh. Too obvious.
Too obvious, yes.
You know, of course, we'd love to see you coming in dressed for that one.
I've never done that.
Yet.
But Jennifer.
Look what happened to me. I started when I was very young, coming to the Rocky Horror Picture Show down at the Alabama Theater. Now the book stopped, about to be torn down.
Ooh. Yes.
Midnight on Saturday night. That was the place to be in costume.
Well, you know, me being in Houston only for a short time now, it's been about 4 years since I've moved here, I've never experienced that. I guess it's one of the things that I need to get to do before the end of an era.
Before it doesn't happen anymore.
That's right.
It doesn't happen anymore. The concert is this Thursday, so short time to get there. We only have a couple rehearsals left before that. But it is coming up.
Where is it?
It's at the Resurrection Metropolitan Community Church, which is on, I think it's 2025 West 11th, which is basically the corner of 11th and T.C. Jester.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful auditorium there that we play in. We also have a little get-together afterwards where we'll have some spooky treats for everyone to come out. And it's just a good time to be had by everyone. We decided to do these concerts, this concert on a Thursday night, because we know that the people have so many things to do on the weekends.
A lot of competition for events in October.
Exactly. So we're gonna change things up. We're gonna do it on a Thursday night. A couple hours of your time, come out and sit and relax and listen to some really great music.
How long has the band been in existence?
This band, oh goodness, I knew you were going to ask me questions like that. This band, the Houston Pride Band, is actually the second oldest gay lesbian band in the country.
Really?
We're right behind San Francisco, and I'm wanting to say 26, 27 years.
Oh my.
Something like that. Of course, I've only been affiliated with the band for the past 4 years, and it's been a wonderful treat for me to be able to get back in and to play music.
Who can play in the band?
What type of
musicians are you seeking for that?
If you can blow on a horn, a musical instrument, I'm going to put it that way. If you can blow on a musical instrument.
Play a cymbal.
Play a cymbal, crash a cymbal, beat on a drum.
Kazoos.
We'll take you. Just come on by. We also rehearse at the RMCC Church on Wednesday nights from 7:30 to around 9:30. So, yeah, if anyone wants to volunteer, if you haven't played in a while, we take all levels of musicians. We even have people that will help you.
Bring it up to speed.
Exactly. Get the rust off of that instrument. Mm-hmm.
Well, if someone's interested, how would they contact you?
They can contact, these questions, I tell you. We have a website, which is, of course, HoustonPrideBand.org. Or you can also contact the following phone number, 832-265-3346, and you can get information from that.
Oh, good. Give that website again. That was kind of fast.
I'll slow down. HoustonPrideBand.org.
Isn't that better?
That is very much better.
Yes.
I tend to speak fast when I'm in a nervous situation, and surrounded by these beautiful people just makes me nervous. That's what it is.
It's just the three of us here. I mean, you know.
Everyone else is stuck in traffic.
That's right.
Normally with the radios on.
With them on, hey.
Or in the water. We are... We do have a concert season planned, so I'd like to kind of speak a lot about.
What's coming up?
What's coming up? We kind of took a turn out of the ordinary this year. We're having our quote-unquote holiday concert. Actually, early. We're having this Spooked on Classics. Instead of having a traditional Christmas-slash-holiday concert, we kind of... going to take a break over the winter. Our next concert is going to be January 25th, which is themed Carnival. So anything from South America to Bourbon Street, New Orleans, that's the type of music.
Mardi Gras, salsa.
Mardi Gras.
Rio, yeah.
We're looking to have a great time for that, and that's going to be on the 25th. And then on May 10th, our concert is going to be called just simply Our Favorite Things. Collections over the years that the band has played. Members are just lining selections up, and we're going to pick the top 10 or so, and that's what we're going to play for this concert. So it's kind of like a smorgasbord of everything we've ever played.
Do you make an effort to play gay composers?
We actually were thinking, when the concert committee got together, we were actually going to have a concert themed around gay composers. I think we may wait until next concert season to go that way. But definitely, we have considered that. As a group, we try to do what the entirety of the group wants. Mm-hmm. That's why we have...
Or she could do a Broadway concert and cover that.
Oh, exactly, exactly. But we try to keep an open mind about what we want to play. And, you know, of course, it all falls into our artistic director's lap to figure out what exactly we are going to play. But we do keep an open mind. I wish we could take requests, though, if we had our season ticket subscribers to mail it in and say, hey, we want to hear this or we want to hear that.
Well, they can email you from the website.
Email us.
And we do have a concert season. You know, people can subscribe to that for us. Another thing, I believe you all mentioned this earlier, is that we are partnering with Assist Hers, and they are actually raising money. We try to partner each concert with a certain nonprofit organization, and what's going on with that is Assist Hers is actually selling tickets, and 50% of the proceeds of those tickets are going directly back to Assist Hers.
Okay, I'll play devil's advocate. Who are the assisters?
That's a good question, because actually I didn't have anything to do with Assist Hers, but they are a group that we're partnering with. I know we've done several things with them already.
Don't they offer assistance to medical assistance and other related assistance to people? I think it's more women oriented.
Yes, that's what it is. We interviewed them week before last for something they were on here for the Decadent Desserts.
Yeah, we've had
which
them
was
on
a fundraiser
number
for that.
Of times.
If they need a judge for that, you know, I'd be more than willing.
I don't know if it's a competition.
Oh, well, hey.
I had a question. If you're interested in the band, and let's say you had the ability to play an instrument, but you don't have the instrument anymore, do y'all have the instruments available?
We do. We have actually the vice president of the band, Lisa Mace, has gone out and done a wonderful job of securing instruments for the band. We've purchased old instruments that we are refurbishing. We've actually had people donate to the band old instruments. We are a 501c3 organization, and we've had people donate several instruments, whether they were broken. I mean, we'll fix them.
Need them refurbish.
That's correct. And the band also has a huge storage with several instruments that we have that we don't have anyone to play. So, I mean, if they had someone out there that, let's say, I didn't want to say clarinets because we have a boatload of clarinets right now, but let's say you played clarinet in high school or college and you were like, I'd like to start playing again, you know, come on over. We'd love to have you. Yeah, and we'll find you an instrument to play on.
Trumpets, those sort of things?
Oh, we always need trumpets. We always, please out there, if anyone plays trumpet, come and talk to me. I'm the only trumpet player, so I feel so alone sometimes.
Have you played all three parts?
Yeah,
That's rather...
That's a one-man band. I'm big, but I don't think I'm that talented, and I don't have that much wind.
Anything else you want us to know about the band?
just we're out looking to have a good time with everyone, so just, you know, help come out and support this community.
Let's recap the event.
Sure.
It's
going to be Thursday, October 19th. This Thursday, everyone. The concert will start at 7:30 at Resurrection Metropolitan Community Church, which is at the corner of 11th and T.C. Jester, and it's Spooked on Classics, Halloween-themed concert.
And your website again?
HoustonPrideBand.org.
And the phone number?
Phone number is 832-265-3346.
And thank you, Kyler Landry, and for Jennifer and JD, you're listening to Queer Voices.
In Conrad's world, filled with the blood and grit of the world that we all live in, the birth of happiness begins with the birth of language.
At its heart, it's about the question we all have to ask ourselves is whether we are to be alone or not to be alone.
It's a salon for the gifted and challenged. Hi-ya! This is where it all happens. Aren't they beautiful?
Welcome to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. South Africa's ruling party backs contentious civil unions. A poet gives birth to a new queer aesthetic and riding the short bus to carnal knowledge. All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Sherry Lund.
And I'm Don Lupo.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending October 14, 2006. A vote in favor of the concept by South Africa's ruling African National Congress all but assures that a civil union bill for same-gender couples will become law this year. That's despite less than enthusiastic public support, according to a report in the Sunday Independent. There have been several recent marches around the country to protest the pending legislation, led by conservative Christian groups. The ANC has a two-thirds majority in Parliament, but has been deeply divided on the issue. It accepted the idea of legal same-gender unions during a National Executive Committee meeting this week, but only after heated debate and resistance from some of its leaders. According to the Independent, participants were reminded that the ANC has always fought for human rights and equality for all people. The civil union bill has been proposed in response to South Africa's constitutional court ruling last December that the country, whose 1994 constitution forbids sexual orientation discrimination, must grant same-gender couples all the rights of marriage by December 1st of this year. It remains to be seen if the civil union legislation, approved by President Thabo Mbeki's cabinet in August, will satisfy the constitutional court ruling.
Danish lesbians and single women will have the same access to publicly funded fertility treatment as heterosexually married women, effective on January 1st. Activists fought a 9-year battle to change the assisted conception laws. More than 3,000 same-gender couples have united under Denmark's groundbreaking 1989 registered partnership law. They have all the rights of marriage except access to adoption.
By a vote of 105 to 83, Finland's parliament this week joined Denmark in approving a government bill to allow single women and lesbian couples access to fertility treatment. It's also been a contentious issue in Finland for several years, and Parliament's Legal Affairs Committee had endorsed a more restrictive version, limiting treatment to heterosexual couples. Police barricades separated demonstrators both for and against the bill in front of the House of Parliament. Those representing conservative Christian groups prayed and defended a child's right to have a father. The other side, bedecked with rainbow-colored banners, emphasized human rights and the importance of love in a child's life. The bill still requires the approval of the Finnish Parliament's Grand Committee, which is considered likely to come soon.
But Sweden is preparing to deport a gay Iranian who had sought asylum. Citing a report from the Foreign Ministry, a Swedish immigration court ruled in late September that most Iranian gays are not persecuted if they live discreet and withdrawn lives. The man claimed he had been assaulted in Iran and jailed because of his sexual orientation, and that he was also raped at a police station. Soren Andersson, head of the Swedish national queer advocacy group RFSL, told The Local, a Stockholm English language publication, that he fears the man may be executed after he's forced back to Iran. Some human rights activists believe they have enough evidence to assert that Iran enforces its death penalty for male anal sex, But Human Rights Watch and the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission have expressed skepticism. The Iranian exile gay group Homan claims that 4,000 homosexuals have been executed since the 1979 Islamic Revolution there. According to Peter Tatchell of the British group Outrage, Homan based the figure on Iranian media reports of LGBT executions and personal reports from people who had gay friends executed or arrested at private parties who were never seen again and were presumed executed. So the idea of 4,000 executions does not seem wildly off the mark. All sides in the activist debate agree that Iran tortures, harasses, and mistreats its LGBT population.
Amnesty International has appealed to Philippines lawmakers to pass pending legislation that prohibits discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity. Michael Heflin, director of Amnesty International USA's Outfront program, said that adoption of this law is very significant for the entire region because only one other Asian country, Fiji, currently prohibits discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation. The legislation would ban anti-LGBT bias in public services, public accommodations, the military, employment, education, and health care.
But while Fiji's 1998 constitution forbids discrimination based on sexual orientation, conservative religious groups have been agitating for a repeal of the protections. Political support for the LGBT community may not be solid. Some legislators have said recently that they were surprised to learn the constitution protects gays and lesbians and that they would not knowingly have supported such safeguards.
A decision by the Indonesian government to allow semi-autonomous regional power has led to the persecution and victimization of LGBT people by local authorities, according to a report in the Jakarta Post. Indonesia has the largest Muslim population in the world, and local governments have been granted the right to use Islamic law, or Sharia. Several have passed laws making homosexuality illegal. One regional law outlawing prostitution includes homosexuality in the definition of that offense. Indonesian LGBT rights group Aris Pelangi has appealed to the Federal Ministry of Justice and Human Rights to force the regions to comply with national law, which bans sexual orientation discrimination. But a federal government spokesperson said that where Sharia is invoked, it has little control and prefers not to be seen as interfering in local governance for fear of appearing to subvert the new local autonomy.
However, Northern Cyprus is set to decriminalize homosexuality, bringing it in line with European Union laws and human rights in the rest of the country, according to a report this week in the British-based Pink News. Current laws in the Turkish Cypriot-controlled part of the country, remaining from the era of British colonial rule, punish homosexuality with up to 14 years in prison as a crime against nature. But nationally known psychologist Mehmet Kakisi told the Cyprus Mail that, "We need this change in order to transform ourselves into a modern society. The right of a person to express his or her sexuality is a fundamental human right." The proposal comes as Turkey seeks membership in the European Union. However, Northern Cyprus isn't covered by EU law because of disputes over who owns it. It's generally known as the Turkish Republic of Cyprus.
A United Nations group has criticized the West African country of Cameroon for jailing 11 men on the basis of their presumed sexual orientation. The men were arrested at a bar frequented by gays and lesbians in the capital of Yaoundé in June 2005 and sentenced to 10 months imprisonment after being found guilty of sodomy. The United Nations Working Group on Arbitrary Detention declared those actions to be contrary to the country's obligations to protect people from discrimination under the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. The ruling came in response to a complaint on behalf of the men brought by the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission and the International Commission of Jurists. The men were detained for more than a year based on anti-homosexuality offenses in Cameroon's penal code. One of them died of AIDS-related complications shortly after his conviction, exacerbated by the harsh conditions of detention. It marks only the second time that this particular UN human rights body has publicly issued an opinion denouncing detentions based on laws against homosexuality. It's been hailed by Alternatives Cameroon, another group that's been working internationally and locally on behalf of the men since their arrest. Spokesperson Joel Gustave Nana expressed the hope that perhaps the working group's decision will help stop other people from being arrested and possibly dying simply because of their sexual orientation. There are other cases in Cameroon that the groups would like to have overturned. According to media reports, at least four other men are still behind bars at Kandengui Central Prison because of their homosexuality, some without formal charge or trial. And four women were convicted of sodomy in June of this year and sentenced to 3 years probation, but threatened with 6 months in prison if they continue their lesbianism.
But finally, an LGBT advocacy group in the southern African nation of Mozambique appears to be in the birthing stages. According to a local press report, that was one of the outcomes of the first ever seminar on LGBT rights held in the country this week, organized by the Human Rights League, or LDH. The proposed LGBT rights group as yet has no name. Some activists want to affirm their lesbi-gay identity with a name such as the Mozambican Gay and Lesbian Movement, but others prefer the more cautious Organization Against Sexual Discrimination. Among other recommendations coming out of the two-day seminar were a call to include information on sexuality in the school syllabus and to have books on the subject available in bookshops and libraries. The seminar also criticized censorship of lesbi-gay issues in the media, although it was generally agreed that local television coverage of the first day of the seminar had been positive. However, an attempt to debate gay and lesbian rights during a phone-in program on Radio Mozambique was squelched by station management. All civil society associations in Mozambique must register with the Ministry of Justice. Closing the meeting, the chairperson of the LDH, Alice Moboda, admitted that it had been difficult for her to take up the issue, but that the role of the League is to promote human rights. She promised to assist in the registration if necessary. Moboda addressed the notion that homosexuality is against African culture, noting that, when we raised the question of domestic violence, we were told to drop the issue because it was part of African culture. We were told that men display their love for their wives by beating them. Now, she says, everybody rejects domestic violence, so in some years, we will overcome discrimination against homosexuals, too.
Oh, and welcome back to 90.1 KPFT. This is Queer Voices. And on the phone with us, we have Nadine Moad, who is currently with the Middle Eastern Gay and Lesbian Rights Organization, HELEM, and they have just put out their first monthly edition of the magazine, Suhaq. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Yes, it's Suhaq.
And welcome to the show. So, Nadine, you're currently in Lebanon. Tell us how you got this project started.
Well, the gay and lesbian movement in Lebanon has been active for around 10 years. It started very underground, very discreetly, with a bunch of people meeting in each other's houses and, you know, discussing the dream of maybe founding an organization, fighting for rights, promoting cultural and awareness events about homosexuality in Lebanon. And 2 years ago, the dream finally came true, and we founded HELEM, which actually means dream in Arabic. And HELEM is here for the protection of the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered, and queer community in Lebanon. And in 2004, we were able to officially open a center in Beirut and start our activities, and we applied for the legal status and everything, and we've been operating ever since.
All right. Could you currently tell us the status of gays and lesbians legally in Lebanon?
Well, legally, there's one article of the law, an anti-sodomy article, that states that sexual intercourse against nature is punishable, and it leads up to a year in prison. And the legal system has been using that law, which is a very broad and vague legal definition. It includes, you know, not only homosexuals, but pedophiles, zoophiles. They've been using this against the gay and lesbian community here, and have constantly harassed people. A lot of blackmail happens, a lot of beating up of people. Last year in 2005, there were some arrests that took place in gay nightclubs. But recently, with HELEM's work and a lot of awareness that we're doing with the police force and lobbying with you know, public figures and politicians and people in the legal departments of the state, we've been able to raise some awareness against that law and demand that the law be removed from the penal code here in Lebanon, and sort of, you know, make people understand that this law does not entitle them to abuse the gay and lesbian community. And so far, we're seeing a slight but persistent change in the way people legally deal with homosexuality today in Lebanon.
And recently, how many people have been prosecuted under Article 534, which is the code that you were referring to, I believe?
The last time anyone was prosecuted was around 2 years ago, and it also included charges against having sex with minors. So that was the last time it was used. So far, it hasn't been used yet against anyone. But you see, the problems that we face here aren't so much, you know, being taken to jail as much as the blackmail that happens, the abuse that happens, the treatment that the gay and lesbian people get. They have to confront their parents, the police call their parents, and there's this whole big mess. So it's not so much about the application of the law as much as, you know, society and how they deal with homosexuality in Beirut.
How is it dealt with in Beirut? Because being outed in America, while it is devastating, most people are able to get around it or move away since this is such a big country. How does it differ there?
Here in Lebanon, as you know, Lebanon is a very diverse country. There's little microcosms of very different backgrounds here. But generally, it is still very hard to come out publicly. It's very hard to confront parents, relatives. We have a lot of cases in Helim where people come and tell us that they've been kicked out of their homes or their jobs or, you know, they're basically out on the streets all alone and they can't, you know, sustain themselves anymore. So we still have a big problem with coming out to one's, you know, family. Generally, being out here in Beirut, in particular, is not so hard. In the, you know, among friends or colleagues or at universities, it's getting better and easier every year. But it's still, if you move a little bit outside of Beirut to the other areas, to the north or the south or the Bekaa, it's still very difficult. And you know, it's an impossible concept for gay and lesbians here in Lebanon to come out to their families and to their employers and to the people around them.
Is it dangerous to come out in Lebanon?
It is very dangerous, yes. Sometimes, I mean, you never know what kind of reaction you can expect from people. But generally, there's a lot of homophobia here in the country. And
Like gay bashing?
Gay bashing, or they could claim they want to kill you, or they could, you know, kick you out of the house or the country or ask you to leave. And there's been a lot of cases like that around where, homophobia leads to a lot of gay bashing here. And again, it's better in some parts than other parts. But in general, there's still a lot of risk taken.
All right. And in the midst of all this, you, along with Helem, have started to publish a magazine called Suhaq. Could you tell us about how that started?
Yes. The project, the Helem is an LGBT organization, and it addresses a very wide variety of sexualities here in Lebanon because we are the only organization and because we're one of, you know, two organizations in the entire Arab world working on homosexuality issues. We decided a little while back that we wanted to work more on empowerment of women within the LGBT group, meaning lesbians, bisexual women, queer women, transgendered women, and kind of give them their own space and their own voice to talk about their own problems, because our set of problems as women are different than the set of problems that the gay men face. Because we are a patriarchal society and the women are very subdued here in this country, and women's rights and feminist rights are lagging very far behind. So the lesbians are facing more problems or different problems than gay men, in that they are first women and they are homosexuals. So the set of issues to discuss and the problems are slightly different. So we decided to start publishing this Suhaq magazine. And Suhaq is actually the Arabic term that is used to define lesbian. It's used in a very derogatory connotation. So we decided to take the word back and give it a little bit of, you know, empowerment for the women so they stop being scared of the word. And we started publishing this design. It's a small publication, but we're going to bring it out every month. And it's mostly online, and we print a few copies and distribute it in a few gay-friendly places around Beirut.
What does suhaq mean in Arabic, anyway, aside from lesbianism? You mentioned it in the magazine.
Yeah, it means, technically, it means the crushing or the rubbing. Something like a crushing rub kind of thing. And it's taken from, I honestly don't know how they had the word, but it's supposed to, you know, point to something done during lesbian sex or something like that. But I'm not entirely sure. Nobody's really sure how. But that's the term that they use in, you know, popular media. And suhaqiyya is the word they use to describe lesbians. And so we kind of like the word, and we wanted to take it back and give it, you know, a different meaning altogether.
So what is in the magazine? I've seen the articles myself, but describe for our listeners lies in wait for them.
In the design, it's mostly stories from a personal perspective. They're written by the girls, the LGBTQ community in Lebanon, the women. And it's mostly about coming out stories, struggles, issues, kind of like breaking the taboos that we face as lesbians. There are, you know, lots of generalizations made about who lesbians are. There's lots of assumptions that people make. Especially here in Lebanon, it's you know, it's not very, we haven't done a lot of awareness about the topic and really introduced ourselves as, you know, a group of people who think and feel and live in a certain way. And the articles are mostly, there's some creative work, there's some, you know, ramblings and thoughts and like a blog style kind of design. And for the coming issues, we're going to get more girls to write up their own personal stories, to talk about things, you know, that bother them and that, you know, issues they face in their everyday lives.
What are the Lebanese lesbian stereotypes anyway? I mean, in America we have the, you know, short-haired, very, very masculine dykes and, of course, the lipstick lesbians. What's it like over there?
Well, we have the same kind of types, if you want. But the general public's attitude towards lesbians, believe it or not, is that they don't take us seriously at all. I mean, they assume, you know, that it's natural for women to want to be men because men are so superior. And, you know, these lesbians are just a bunch of women, you know, having fun, and they want to try to be like men, or they want to look like men, or they want to grab the attention of men. And we don't really have a strong voice that, you know, identifies our identity. But as you said, we have, you know, we have the same kind of types here. And in the magazine, in suhaq, we mentioned that this is a publication of all these categories, you know, the butches, the dykes, the femmes, the androgynous, the queers, we want to represent all of these voices in this one magazine, but, you know, represent a true representation of what these things mean and what sexual identities of women mean, because it's really, honestly, not taken seriously much here in the country.
Now that you've created this women's space, what is your ultimate, where are you going with it? Do you expect it to take off, or how do you expect it to grow in the future?
Yeah. For now, what we've done is we've sort of created this online community of girls. We have around 42 girls subscribed to it. And we're having some, you know, light talks, some talks about introducing ourselves, talking about ourselves, getting to know each other online. And then in a couple of months, we're hoping to start, you know, meeting regularly and coming up with some activists, material, some activities we can do, some projects that we can work on within Hilim and within this, you know, safe space that we've created. Hopefully what we're aiming at is really getting these girls empowered first and foremost, and trying to publish something that truly represents us, and, you know, lobby alongside with the gay men as well to change the legal status of homosexuality and to change homophobia and to fight against it and all of that.
All right. What projects do you have in mind?
Well, the publishing of Sohag is one project that we'd like to, you know, take to another level, hopefully in a year or so. We've seen a lot of zines and magazines that you guys in the States and that are published in Europe that are really amazing. I mean, we wait for them every month. We order them here and we look through them. And we'd like to publish something of really good quality. And later on, we'd also like to do some cultural activities. We have at Hedem a community center and a library and some nights we display DVDs on homosexuality and a cine club. And we have discussions and we have support groups. So we want to really bring the girls into this community center, create their own support groups, therapy help, group therapy, discussions. It's all about really empowering the individual, a lesbian, bisexual, transgendered, or queer woman. And from them, we'll see what they would like to do and what activities me and they are hoping to do, alongside with Helen's general, you know, activism.
On that note, with those activities, recently, of course, as anybody who's been paying attention has noticed, that Israel attacked Lebanon. And how has that affected, has that set you all back any, or how has that affected the effort to get all this done?
Well, the situation in the country has kind of changed since the war and during the war. It's taken us back economically and socially. There's a lot of politics now going on. There's a lot of, you know, different and fighting and struggling. There's a lot of, you know, political confusion. There's a lot of instability right now in Lebanon. And it's affected us, you know, the lesbian and gay community, as much as it's affected everyone else on an individual and, you know, on a group level. Because really you can't, when you're fighting for basic survival, human rights is you start talking about human rights of basic survival and shelter and food and all of that. And we've had a huge percentage of the population suffer tremendously because of the war. So when it shifts to kind of basic survival needs, then, you know, human rights, which is gay and lesbian rights, becomes kind of not a priority at the moment. And during the war, Helen was very involved in relief work along with maybe 25 other NGOs. And we stopped, we suspended all our activities, and we just focused on getting supplies in for the internally displaced families. There were around a million people who were displaced in Lebanon. So we kind of shifted our activities towards that. And now after the war, we're kind of, you know, playing it by ear and seeing how the situation will allow us to reassume our own LGBT issues in particular.
All right. The website for Helem is www.helem.net, excuse me,
and .net, yes.
And for the Helem Girls website is www.helem.net/girls, and you'll find a link to their magazine there in PDF format. Is there anything you'd like to add before we go?
No, I'm just thank you a lot for listening to me, for hosting me on the show, and good luck to you guys.
Thank you very much. This is 90.1 KPFT Queer Voices, and here's some... JD, would you like to introduce some music?
We're going to do a set of three songs from artists who will be at the Houston Women's Festival, starting off with Deidre McCalla, and then Patricia Pike, and then the Ginn Sisters. So, and after that, we'll talk to someone from the festival.
Mama loves me, yes, it's true. And my mommy loves me, too.
Come discrimination mama against homosexuals, too.
That's News Wrap for the week ending October 14th, 2006. Written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFT Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Don Lupo.
And I'm Sherry Lott.
In late-breaking news, the first openly gay person elected to the U.S. Congress, former Massachusetts Representative Gary Studs, died October 14th at the age of 69. His staunchly Republican Cape Cod area district sent the Democrat Studs to Washington in 1973. His 24-year career was distinguished by his work to protect the coastal environment and his role in uncovering the Reagan administration's clandestine support of the right-wing Nicaraguan Contras. Stubbs was forced out of the closet in 1983 when a former congressional page revealed the consensual relationship they'd had 10 years earlier. Despite a House censure, Stubbs remained unapologetic. Re-elected for five subsequent terms, Stubbs became a champion of AIDS funding, lesbian and gay military service members, and same-gender marriage. Washington seemed to have mostly forgotten Stubbs since his retirement in 1997 until just 2 weeks before his death. Anxious to deflect some of the negative attention from the scandal involving former Representative Mark Foley's online sexual advances to congressional pages, several House Republicans have resurrected the 23-year-old Stubbs story as an indication of the Democrats' hypocrisy. Stubbs is survived by his husband.
Here at KPFT, your vote matters most. Now here's a word from one of our candidates.
My name is Joseph Kay. I stand for our mission to work for peace, justice, and the relevant education that will make a difference for all of us. I believe we need to empower our station with effective planning. We also need to create the means to identify what people need in our community and to use that to guide the wiser use of our resources. We can also develop powerful partnerships to work together on the great challenges we all face. I'll use my experience as a social worker, civil rights activist, union organizer, and family violence child abuse prevention specialist, along with my experiences in fundraising, for all of our sakes. Vote for harmony and peace in my 7-part growth plan. Vote for Joseph K.
This is 90.1 KPFT, Houston.
There's a beat, there's a rhythm, pounding relentlessly in the keeper's heart. It never sleeps, it's always driven. You see too that every song is true, straight on to the mark. Hit it like you need it, never let go of the passion. Sing every note with wild abandon, as if it just might be your last. The promise of salvation is reserved. Does a storm still rage that will not be tamed? With every breath that you are given, take your best shot, it's all you've got. Hold on and fan the flames. Hit it like you mean it, never let go of the passion. Sing every note with wild abandon, as if it just might be your last. Salvation is reserved for those who keep playing it, playing for time, playing for keeps. Do not go gently into that good night. Bring every moment to aid sweats, precious beads of light. Every is meant to chart a path to lead you home. Do not deny the journey taken. It's an endless chore with no room for pretenders to the throne. Hit it like you mean it, never let go of the passion. Sing every note with wild abandon, as if it just might be your last. The promise of salvation is reserved.
vote in the upcoming station board election. Now here's one of our candidates.
Hello, my name is Brian Swain, and I'm running for the KPFT local station board because I believe that a vibrant alternative media outlet is a key contributor to making Houston a great place to live and work. I have served on the board for the past 10 months, and with your support, I will continue working to make KPFT a station we can all be proud of. My background in business and technology will enable me to have a lasting impact on the station, and my strong international experience gives me a broad perspective on the challenges that the board and the station face every day. I encourage you to contact me either by email at bswain2000@yahoo.com or by phone at 713-436-2714 to share your questions and concerns about the future of the station. I'm Brian Swain, and I sincerely appreciate your support.
This is 90.1 KPFT, Houston.
You're playing chicken on the dead end road, Russian roulette. Overload. Got everything going for you right down the drain. Well, I'll bet your mama don't know just how you've been treating your soul. Oh, you don't care as long as you don't feel a thing. Got everything going for you right down the drain. You're just
was an abrupt ending. This is J.D., and I'm here with Jennifer and Charmin Petrie. And you just heard, you heard a couple KPFT campaign promos, but among that, you heard lots of music from the upcoming Houston Women's Festival. We started off with Deidre McCalla, one of my favorites, and the one person, I shouldn't say this, the person I'm looking forward to the most to see at the festival, because she's a real pioneer. We followed Deidre with Patrice Pike, and we followed her with, oh my goodness, who did we follow her with? The Ginn Sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just joking with Charmin before. The Ginn Sisters should be very honored that I'm playing a straight group on Queer Voices, but I really like their song. Charmin?
Well, like, they're great, and they're, you know, we don't want to have it just be for necessarily lesbian artists, although we do, most of our artists are lesbian artists. But, you know, it's the Houston Women's Festival.
Yes, not the Houston Lesbian Festival.
That is correct.
So what do you want us to know about the festival this week?
Well, we've got some fabulous artists lined up. It's one of our best lineups ever. We've got Patrice Pike, who has always been a Houston favorite, but, you know, this year she was on a national television show that brought her a lot of notoriety to people that may not have otherwise known Patrice.
That was Supernova?
That is correct.
Rockstar
Supernova. Uh-huh.
Okay.
And, you know, she was picked out of 25,000 people that submitted, you know, tapes, resumes, and, you know, 25 out of 25,000, she was one of the 15 selected. So she's gotten a lot of notoriety from that show. I mean, that show aired to 9 million people each night that it was on, and she was on for 6 consecutive weeks. So, you know, we're hoping that that will draw some people that otherwise might not come to our festival, because we've been basically gotten a grassroots following, you know, word of mouth, and we don't do a lot of advertising. Of course, KPFT is our media sponsor, and you guys have been so generous. But that's really the only way we get the word out, is through community radio, and we do advertise in some of the local gay publications, but we don't advertise in any of the mainstream publications, simply because we don't have the budget. It's, you know, it's as simple as that. So we've got a good grassroots following, but we're hoping that, you know, there will be some people that come out and hear about the festival that, like I said, would not have otherwise heard about it. And, you know, we've also got some other good artists besides Patrice Pike. Garrison Starr is a Vanguard recording artist that has done a lot in the last few years as far as getting her own grassroots following. She's done very well in touring across the country, and she's played here in Houston on several occasions within the last year, and building quite a Houston fan base. So we've got her, and then the Ginn Sisters, like you said, that we heard, and they're bringing a little bit of a country and Americana element to the festival.
I like that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a lot of Texans that they like their country. So, you know, we wanted to include, you know, that kind of element. So, but we've got just a lot of great artists coming.
Charmin asked me to chime in about Deidre McCalla, because I interviewed her about 2 years ago on Queer Music Heritage, and it's a wonderful interview. For those of you who don't know, she's been recording, I think her first album was 1975. And
that sounds about right.
And so, see, for several decades now, she's been contributing great music. She's also an activist in the Atlanta area, doing some wonderful work there. So, you know, we want to honor her for both areas. But the music is just darn good. I've been playing her for a while now. One of the songs we played was called Mama Loves Me, a very short song that talks about non-traditional families. And it just really hit to the point, and she did it in like a minute and 45 seconds, so she's good.
Well, when is the festival again?
Well, this Saturday. It's creeping up on me. It's this Saturday, October 21st. It's from noon until 10 p.m. The doors are going to open probably about 11:30, so people can get
Jones
in and
Hall?
Get
Jones Plaza.
Jones Plaza. There is plenty of theater parking. There's some of the theater parking is directly under Jones Plaza, and that's a pretty big lot. And I think it actually, you know, is all underground. So I think
there's some street parking if you're early.
Yeah, if you're early. So yeah, it's next Saturday from noon until 10 p.m. and it's going to be a great festival. We've got a lot of good talent coming out there. So
what else is at the festival though?
Well, there's vendors. We've got some arts and crafts vendors. We've got of course we've got several food vendors. We've got there's some nonprofit organizations that are going to be giving people some information on various organizations. Mm-hmm. There's also going to be a couple of artists out there that are going to have their art on display. So
You'll be selling festival T-shirts.
There will be festival T-shirts, and all the artists will have, their band merchandise. Mm-hmm. They'll have their CDs and T-shirts, and you can spend your money a lot of ways.
You were going to tell us about some of the new artists this year that we might not be familiar with.
Right. Well, Laurel is one artist that she's been playing at Chances some, but she's an artist out of Louisiana, and she hasn't played too much in the Houston or Texas area, so there's probably going to be a lot of people that are not going to know who she is. But that's one of the things that we at the festival like to do is introduce emerging artists.
She has CD.
She has a CD. It's her debut CD. Just came out, I think, last month. So it's fresh off the press. So
you probably could go to laurelbuzz.com and sample her music.
That is correct.
L-A-U-R-E-L, buzz, like it sounds, .com.
That's right.
All the artists have websites, and you can find links to those at the Houston Women's Festival site.
That is correct.
What's that address again?
It's www.hwfestival.org.
That's pretty easy.
It is.
hwfestival.org.
Now, if they're really wanting to actually talk to someone, I'll give a phone number. The official festival phone number is 713-995-5251.
There's a couple other acts I'm not familiar with on this list. Adrian and the Sickness and Echo Set.
Well, they are both artists out of Austin. Adrian and the Sickness is a hard, hard-driven rock, and Adrian is one heck of a performer. I mean, she is all over the stage, puts on a really dynamic show. I mean, on her knees, playing the guitar. She's just an awesome guitarist. She also, this is her original music band. She also, just to give you an idea of the kind of artist she is and the hard type, driven rock that she does, she has an all-female AC/DC tribute band that's called Hell's Bells, and they are quite
P-E-L-L-E-S.
Mm-hmm. That is correct. So Adrian is just a dynamic performer, and I think people are going to really be entertained by her. She puts on quite a show. Now Echo Set is another really great band out of Austin. They haven't done, they used to tour Houston quite a bit, but then they started concentrating more on doing longer tours, like going out to California and that type of thing. So they haven't really been in Houston that much in the last year or so, and that was one reason we wanted to bring them to the festival, because people haven't seen them in a long time, and they've they've got a pretty good fan base here, but like I said, they haven't been here in a while, and we thought this would be a great opportunity to get them back.
How would you describe Etika Luckett's music?
Oh, she's amazing. First of all, she's a master guitarist. She plays a lot of She plays on the neck a lot and just a real intricate stuff.
I saw her at the International Festival, I think, this past spring. Good artist.
Right. Well, she's got the whole package. She's got a great voice. She's a very good songwriter. She's an excellent guitarist.
Very good looking.
And very good looking. That doesn't hurt. And
I may show up, for sure.
And she also is very international because she sings in Portuguese, Spanish, and French, as well as English. So, you know, she mixes it up and really gives the festival a lot of international flair. So, and so does Ginger Lee. Ginger Lee speaks fluent Italian and has toured in Italy, tours in Italy at least twice per year, and so she'll sing in Italian. She'll also sing some in Spanish. And so, yeah, we've got the international flair going on there for the festival.
What are Ginger's albums like?
She is variety. She doesn't like to people to get bored, so she writes in various styles. Some of it's jazz, some of it's rock driven, some of it is like, you know, pop rock with blues and jazz, and some's kind of like pop punk, I guess you would say. So, I mean, she really gives a lot of variety. She also does a lot of different types of shows. I mean, sometimes she'll play strictly jazz clubs. So she's a fifth generation musician, so she grew up in the music business. Her whole family is in the music business. So, you know, she grew up on stage and has a lot of different influences from, you know, big band to Madonna to, you know, rock and roll, Ani DiFranco, you name it, she's got the influences. So,
with the variety of these artists, how do you figure out the lineup?
That is tough. I just now got this lineup out about 2 weeks ago because I was struggling with it. I really was. And so a lot of it depends.
I mean the playing order.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. Right. I mean, they're all so good. It's hard to decide who I'm going to put where, but I try to.
Well, Patricia's probably last.
Right. She is last. But what I try to do is I try to mix up the duos and solos with and bands so that I don't. You also have to think about changeovers. For instance, if I have a band playing, then a duo or a solo needs to follow that because of
quick changeover. Yeah,
exactly. So I mean that has some play in it also. Plus the popularity of the band or duo, also their, you know, I guess touring experience and resume. I mean, all those things go into factor into it. But we've got such a good lineup this year that it was a tough decision to come up with that lineup.
Well, who's going to lead off?
Laurel is going to lead
off. Laurel's going to lead off. Okay.
Do you ever have any folks sitting in on others' sets, like singing a guest duet or something?
Well, you know, sometimes that does happen. Since we've been at Jones, it's not as easy to do because it's such a big stage. But Ginger Lee and Patrice Pike tour together all the time, so it wouldn't surprise me if Patrice joins Ginger or Ginger joins Patrice or vice versa. That wouldn't surprise me at all.
That's always a treat for the audience. That's something special.
Yeah, and since they're going back to back, you know, that just may happen. But, you know, that's for them to decide. That's not anything that I control.
Who's moderating all this?
Well, we've got Nancy Ford as the MC. She's going to do the stage from about 5. She's taking like the 5 o'clock hour on to closing. And then we have
she could handle any transitions needed. She's been doing this like 500 years.
Yes. She's
not quite that old.
Well, but she'll add a lot of humor to the element. That, no doubt. So
Nancy and I grew up about 10 miles from each other in Ohio.
I didn't know that a century ago.
Yes.
Well, she'll definitely add, you know, she'll give us a little comic relief.
She can sing if hard pressed, though, too.
That's what I understand. I'm actually going to be going to her show tomorrow. We're at Chances. We're going to also have some tickets there if people that come out to the show have any interest in getting in their last minute pre-ticket sales, because they're a few dollars cheaper than they are at the door. So, you know, it's an opportunity for them to get advance ticket prices. And we also have tickets at Lucia's Garden. It's over off Greenbrier in Portsmouth, and at DiCapo's Bakery, which is on East, I think it's 1141 East 11th or something to that effect. But those are two places where they, where people can get tickets in advance if they so desire.
So, again, it's at Jones Plaza.
Correct.
It's on Saturday, the 21st, and it begins, what was it, 1?
It begins at noon.
Noon, and goes till you finish, huh?
Well, it goes till 10 p.m. We actually have to be, the music has to end at 10 p.m. due to city ordinance, which is unfortunate.
All those people that sleep downtown, right?
Yeah.
on the corner.
I think
in the alleys.
I think city ordinances and the noise at 10 is kind of ridiculous, but you know, that's
if you
the way
don't get
it
your
is
fill of music by then, well, you know, buy some CDs.
Well, we used to go till midnight, but you know, we've stopped.
So, if people want to come out early to see the vendors and get the souvenirs, they can.
You can mingle at the same time, but you can hear the music from all over.
Yeah, you absolutely can, but you know, come out. I was at the festival. My first festival was probably 5 or 6 years ago, and I went because a friend of mine had some art there, and I said, oh, I'm going to make my appearance and, you know, leave after 20 minutes. I got so involved in it, in the music and just everything that was going on, I stayed the entire day. So I was there from noon until midnight.
Who was there that day?
that's a tough question.
No, I can tell you exactly who was there. Susan Gibson. That was the very first time I ever saw Patrice Pike. I didn't know who she was, but I totally fell in love with her music. And also, after the festival was run so professionally and so well, I mean, there's been a glitch, a detectable glitch. Now, you know, there's some things that go on that probably, you know, we can smooth out and learn from, but people cannot tell at all because it's run so professionally. That's why I got involved in it, because I said, this is something I've got to be involved in. So, yeah, Patrice Pike, Susan Gibson, that's the only ones I can remember right now, but there were some good artists.
That was at Garden in the Heights?
That was at Garden in the Heights, right.
That's when I started going. And this is a good time to mention that men are welcome.
Absolutely.
And, you know, for a while I heard about the festival and I thought, well, I don't really want to go because I'm not sure I would feel comfortable and I don't want to intrude on women's space. Bunk.
Well,
there are a lot of guys there.
Yeah. Well, one of the reasons it's called the Houston Women's Festival is because it features women fronted bands.
Uh-huh.
It's not just for women. We welcome men and children.
And men will not feel out of place.
No, they won't.
Not at all.
Not at all. And just one other thing I would like to mention, if people are interested, Garrison Starr is actually going to be on KPFT's Radioactive program, which airs this Friday at 2 p.m.
Good.
Get a chance to, you know, get a preview, live preview, because she's going to sing a couple of tunes live.
Anything we should have asked you?
Boy, I think we covered a lot.
Okay, well, you can go to hwfestival.com if you
org.
Yeah. That's why we have three of us sitting here.
Yes, that's right. All one brain.
That's sure. Right. Go ahead.
Jones Plaza this Saturday, noon till 10. A long list of artists, and we're going to go out with a couple of them. We're going to go out with Etika Lookit and Ginger Lay, and just enjoy the music. And you're listening to Queer Voices.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
The leaves that burn to gold and fall from vibrant green, do they long for what they were, or do they let go? They just let go, doing cartwheels.
Breaking news, the first openly gay person elected to the U.S. Congress, former Massachusetts Representative Gary Studs, died October 14th at the age of 69. His staunchly Republican Cape Cod area district sent the Democrat Studs to Washington in 1973. His 24-year career was distinguished by his work to protect the coastal environment and his role in uncovering the Reagan administration's clandestine support of the right-wing Nicaraguan Contras. Studs was forced out of the closet in 1983 when a former congressional page revealed the consensual relationship they had had 10 years earlier. Despite a House censure, Studs remained unapologetic. Re-elected to five subsequent terms, Studs became a champion of AIDS funding, lesbian and gay military service members, and same-gender marriage. Washington seemed to have mostly forgotten Studs since his retirement in 1997 until just 2 weeks before his death. Anxious to deflect some of the negative attention from the scandal involving former Representative Mark Foley's online sexual advances to congressional pages, several House Republicans have resurrected the 23-year-old Studs story as an indication of the Democrats' hypocrisy. Studs is survived by his husband Dean Hara, whom he married in 2004 in Massachusetts, a brother, sister, and sister-in-law, four nephews, and an English Springer Spaniel. You'll hear a Rainbow Minute on the queer version of U.S. flagmaker Betsy Ross and get the inside scoop on the controversial sexy sensation heading for movie theaters in the U.S., Europe, and Australia. But first, This Way Out correspondent Janet Mason guides us out of an often all too prosaic world into more lyrical climes.
Poet, visionary, and human liberationist C.A. Conrad brings us a new and necessary queer aesthetic in his collection of poetry, Deviant Propulsion, published in 2006 by Soft Skull Press. This aesthetic is not one of grasping assimilation and is also not one of rebelling against this in predictable ways. What C.A. Conrad wishes for us is to be more free, to have more conversations with ourselves, to observe life so keenly that new vision is rearranging the molecules. In the last stanza of Subterrestrial Aria for Kevin Killian and Dodie Bellamy, First Watch, Conrad writes, "Imagine tasting wind through field of wheat in bread." Leafing through the book, letting the words filter in slowly, the shapes of the sounds in his visual wordplay, I find myself falling into some ancient poetic place, tracing the cave paintings with my eyes and sifting through the fragments of a civilization in ruin to find the torn pieces of happiness, some of which are entire poems. Some mornings your hair is exactly the way you want it when you wake up, and you don't shower to not mess it, and you want the trees of Philadelphia to smell exactly who you are, sweat and semen of your lover. My God, it's beautiful out here. It feels good until it feels superficial, and then you feel guilty, and if you are lucky, you stop. Understand guilt as someone else's idea, and you get the love again. In Conrad's world, filled with the blood and grit of the world that we all live in, the birth of happiness begins with the birth of language. Consider this. In the Black Forest, before the birth of Rilke, under her skirts of bark, the hidden pencils grow. Even as Conrad brings us a new queer aesthetic, he smashes the walls of every form of categorization, writing, as he does, "Carry another sex on your sex in your fellow human streets. Look and look, listen, listen, this risen spirit, trying hard to belong to no one. Hail down the want." In a time when so many voices are silenced and when so many others blur together, Conrad rises above the crowd with his vibrato of unique authenticity. Many stake claims on becoming the great American novelist, but Conrad, in his insistence on being himself and pointing out the absurd and then often becoming it, writes in a voice that is rooted in the screaming to be liberated psyche of this country. Above anything, I value my American roots of dissidence, maintenance of removing control off me, control off me, control of me, commit the muscle to love.
This is Janet Mason for This Way Out.
Gilbert Baker, the creator of the rainbow flag, the omnipresent symbol of gay pride, coming up next on the Rainbow Minute. Gilbert Baker was born in Kansas in 1951 and years later arrived in San Francisco. He came out in the early 70s and met gay activist icon Harvey Milk, who inspired him to get involved. Baker was known for creating bold and colorful banners for gay protests and events, and Milk convinced Baker to create a flag design for the growing gay movement. As the gay movement was taking shape in 1978, the rainbow flag served as a rallying cry to fight the anti-gay rhetoric of Anita Bryant. Originally designed as an 8-color striped flag by Baker, it was reduced to a 7-striped flag because hot pink was not available for mass production. 1 year later, it lost the color indigo in memory of Harvey Milk's death. Today, the 6-color flag is recognized by the International Congress of Flag Makers as the official gay pride flag. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in studios of WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Dustin Richardson.
Hi, this is John Cameron Mitchell, the writer-director of Hedwig and the Angry Inch and Short Bus. And you're listening to This Way Out, the international weekly radio magazine for all our sexually diverse communities.
A troubled gay male couple, a bored bisexual dominatrix, a sexually frustrated sex therapist. They're just some of the characters who populate the controversial new movie, Short Bus. Their various journeys intersect at an exclusive private club where they navigate the complicated back roads of love and lust. This Way Out's Steve Fried hitched a ride on the Short Bus with creator John Cameron Mitchell to talk about cinematic sex, sexuality, and life after Hedwig.
I'm the mistress of Short Bus. It's a salon for the gifted and challenged. This is where it all happens. Aren't they beautiful? It's just like the 60s, only with less hope. Oh, for a minute I thought that man didn't have an arm.
I'm John Cameron Mitchell, the writer and director and producer of Short Bus. My last film was Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
John, what is Short Bus about?
At its heart, it's about the question we all have to ask ourselves is whether we are to be alone or not to be alone. It's about a group of young people in their 30s in New York, post 9/11, definitely exhausted by Bush, in this strange time where it seems harder to connect, where life seems a bit more powerless than ever before, even though we're supposed to be the most powerful country in the world. It's like this strange numbness that a lot of people feel here and trying to reach out and connect with themselves and with others.
What inspired Short Bus? Where did the idea come from?
Obviously, there's a lot of ideas in Short Bus, but the idea of using real sex in a film that was emotional and humorous and a real New York story came when I was doing Hedwig and was watching a lot of films out of Europe. I mean, there's dozens of films just this year that have been using real sex and coming from foreign countries mostly. I had seen a lot of these films and I thought it was very fascinating to use that language of sex that we all know a few words of. But most of them were very grim and bleak. And I thought, well, there's more there than just bleakness, and there's more there than just titillation. You know, porn certainly has its place, but I think actually most porn is as formulaic as Hollywood. So I wanted to de-eroticize the sex and see what was left over, like panning for gold. What is left is emotion, ideas, humor, all kinds of revealing things about our lives when you can sort of get the titillation out of the way. Certainly there's some darkness involved, and also some of the funniest things any of us have experienced have to do with sex, too. It's a ridiculous, incongruous act that's irrational and therefore compartmentalized by American society and the powers that be because it's scary. You know, it's It's more scary than violence, because violence is about gaining power, and sex, you sort of lose power in a way when you're sexually aroused in some people's minds. You know, it's like, it's too scary. Hide it away. You know, the churches tend to hide it away. It's more powerful than God. It's, you know what I mean? It's like, it's so scary to some people when we remind ourselves that in our lives it actually can be integrated in a way that's funny and emotional and complicated. Why not respect sex in films the way you respect it in life? Or hopefully you respect it in life.
You know, I really didn't find the sex in your film to be gratuitous or pornographic in any way. Instead, when I left the theater, I had a feeling that I had been cheated by the sexual activities I had seen on screen in A-list films.
I always felt patronized when I see traditional films that when the sex begins, we sort of float away to the clouds or the candle or the sheet. And I feel like I'm being treated like a child. Every other part of our lives is shown in almost to excess, you know, or at least we're given the benefit of the doubt that we can handle it as adults. But I always feel like I'm being treated like a child, condescended to by filmmakers when they just sort of dissolve away and assume that we all know what's going to happen. But as we know, the thing that happens is much more complicated. It almost assumes that all sex is good, which is an odd thing to do, when in fact it's embarrassing, it's funny, it's great, it's sad, it's boring, it's all these things. It has a full range of emotional connections with the rest of our lives. Why not use every paint in the paint box?
Speaking of range, it's really unusual to see a film that covers heterosexual, homosexual, pansexual storylines and sexualities.
Well, I realize if I'm going to go there, I might as well go all the way. And I might as well challenge straight audiences, gay audiences, lesbian, bisexual, to remind us that we're all in the same boat. Certainly in our culture, people try to separate bisexuality. Gay people hide away in a ghetto. Straight people disapprove of gay marriage. Everyone tries to create a separate ghetto to somehow belong and feel less scared. But lately, they just sort of feel like marketing niches. I mean, kids learn about sex from porn rather than through actual life and through actual art. And porn is, I have actually no problem with it as it's a morally neutral thing. I think it can be used very badly and made very badly. It can be really good. This film really isn't porn. I haven't met anyone who's actually been aroused by it, because the plot and the characters are so integrated with the sex that you don't have time to be aroused. You know, I think, you know, you can be aroused by this lamp sitting next to me if you want to. I can't control that. But in our case, our priority is not... It's a beautiful lamp, isn't it? Our priority is not really to arouse, because I don't believe you should mix titillation with sex when you're examining it in a real serious way. I think porn does that much better. Everyone who's seen the film has told me that by the end, sex is the last thing they remember about it. Almost like at the end of a long relationship. You know, this film is not a one-night stand. It's a relationship. And sex is one of the many things in it. But the things that you remember most are probably more emotional and the more humorous. And maybe a couple of political comment here or a joke there that might have a sexual connection. But it isn't only about sex. Sex is never only about sex. Sex is connected to every other part of our life, and that's what this film is trying to remind us. People say, well, it's not what I expected, because we in America don't connect sex with emotion and humor. I mean, we do with this double entendres all over the place, but we don't see examples of sex in film where the heart is on the sleeve. And why is that? Because in our lives, we often have sexual connection with emotion. Boredom, embarrassment, humor, love, deep need for connection. Why don't we see that in films? I believe people would be less afraid of sex. There'd be less sexual violence if people were more relaxed about it. If people were like, oh yeah, it is a part of life. You know, there's this strange belligerence that happens when you don't accept different parts of our lives as necessary, as human things.
What do you want the audience to take away from the film?
I want people to feel a little more mercy for each other. I want there to be an understanding that we're all in the same boat. We're all lonely. We're all reaching out to connect with human beings. I mean, the feeling of the blackout in New York 2 years after 9/11 was the feeling that I want people to take away from this film, is that once everything stopped, lights went off, we first thought we were dead. We thought it was the terrorists. Then we realized we just overdid it. We just had our phones and internet and air conditioners, they were just overloaded the system. And all of those phones and emails and things are really tools by which we try to connect, but they often separate us. So when everything stopped, people started meeting each other in their buildings they had never met before and had parties on the stairs. There were bonfires in the park. There was a marching band that went by that ended up in my film. We suddenly couldn't recognize our own, the streets where we lived. And that was a good thing because you looked people in the eye and there was no violence that night and it was a beautiful thing. And that's the feeling I want people to take away from this film.
What are your thoughts on mainstream gay culture?
I get really frustrated with mainstream gay culture. I think it's a marketing niche now. Growing up, you know, as a sexual minority, gender or sexuality-wise, you're given a privilege. You're given a way of looking at the world from a different point of view, and you can abuse it or you can use it well. And so many people just use it to try to be like everyone else. And I think that gay culture is more conformist. They're more into having the same body, the same music, the same movies, living in the same neighborhoods, the same hairstyles, the same way of having sex. It's so formulaic. It's so depressing to me. And the fact that young people are not being safe anymore, not respecting each other. I guess I'm old-fashioned. You know, I really do believe that sex and love and all of these things are privileges that we have. And it's like, I'm very sex positive, but I'm not like, you know, I think crystal meth is a scourge and it preys on people who have low self-esteem. It makes them feel strong and sexy, but they end up treating people badly. I mean, internet sex, people are really rude to each other online. By separating sex away from the other parts of our lives, we enjoy it less. And to me, it's like, don't separate yourselves into labels. I mean, we all have a little bit of bisexuality. None of us are just tops or bottoms or bears or twinks. Why do we have to keep saying what we are and what we want when every year of our lives we find out more of who we are and what we want? Why limit yourselves now? Spread it out. Loosen it up a little bit. Listen to some music you've never heard. Watch some straight sex if you're gay. If you're straight, watch some gay sex. We're all in the same boat.
This has been a conversation with John Cameron Mitchell. You can find more information on Shortbus at shortbusthemovie.com or prideonscreen.com. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Is heard every week as part of Queer Voices,
International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Sherry Lund, Don Lupo, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, Graham Underhill, Janet Mason, Judd Proctor, and Brian Burns with Justin Richardson, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out anytime, exclusively at outinamerica.com. You can also click on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. Most This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from you, our listeners, and we thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep this program on the air and choose from some special CD thank you gifts. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on KZYXNZ, Philo, Willits, and Ukiah, California, Free Radio Asheville, Asheville, North Carolina, CKLU, Sudbury, Ontario, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Please do stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
This is J.U. Doyle.
And Jennifer Renee.
And we're back, and we have Aaron Coleman on the phone, and he's going to talk about poetry. Aaron, are you with us?
Hi there.
Welcome to the show.
Are you with us, sir?
Let me get closer to the door. You're dropping out. How's it going?
Good, good. What are you calling in about this time? You've got something good to tell us. What is it?
Well, I'm having a poetry event this Friday, October the 20th, from 6 to 9 at the fabulous art gallery, Barrett James Gallery. It's at 805 Road Place, Suite 500, and that's near Taft in Dallas. and the theme is jazz, poetry, and art. Remember, Smoky Coffee Houses used to be the heart of beat poets and jazz musicians and left-wing politicos.
Yeah, unfortunately, we remember that.
and they used to lament over lost love and politics, but they all indulged their love of coffee, and we're trying to have that kind of a setting, that kind of a mood happening. So I've invited a bunch of my poet friends, Kim Pickens, Phil Smith, Sarah Crowder, Thomas Blanton, Charles Harvey, and Selena Villarreal are supposed to show up. So I'm hoping that we'll have a, you know, kind of a smoky, well, it won't be smoky, but it'll have coffee and jazz, music playing, and the beautiful art that's featured at Baring and James. And I want to thank Austin James and Blakely Baring and Tim Brookover of Outsmart Magazine for sponsoring and having me.
I've been in that gallery. That's very nice.
I saw
Joe Watts' last play there just a few weeks ago.
Right, The Normal Heart. It was. Mm-hmm. It works in so many different areas. I mean, it could be poetry happening. It can be a production like Joe Watts had. It's just a great space to have an event.
Kind of tell us how to get there, because it's not maybe what you'd expect.
It's one block toward downtown off of Dallas. It's Road Place. So at Taft and Dallas, you come back one block, and that's Road Place, and you just go to the, it's a dead end, and you just go to the end of the street, and you can't miss it. It's on the right-hand side, 805 Road Place.
Now, this is benefiting the community center, is that correct?
Right, yeah. It's free, and the donations are being requested that will benefit the GLBT Community Center, and refreshments are going to be served, and I hear there's some killer cheesecake that's going to show up, so it's going to be a happening.
Are you going to share any of the poetry with us as like a preview? Or?
Sure, I could do that for you. I wrote something recently. It's called Swimming with Sharks, inspired by a Metro bus ride.
When you're ready.
Okay. They work in my nerve till it frazzles on end. The sun comes up and they do it again. They single me out because I generally smile. I'm so important, they think it worthwhile. I'm in a pond, swimming with sharks. They smell my blood and it's getting dark. I'm removed from the cage, in touch with my own rage. Forget the forces that put me here, as I do battle with my fear that I, too, am a shark.
Ooh, I can hear a bass behind you. And you're wearing sunglasses.
Definitely sunglasses.
And you've got to have that leather tam.
All right, I'm going to be wearing a hat.
I can see it.
And the strains of jazz music will be playing in the background.
Oh.
It's going to be happening. I mean, I remember that from my old days at University of Houston where, you know, used to be the Cougar Den and smoke happening, people playing bridge and jazz music happening, and some poets would get up and read, and I miss that.
Can you give us another one, Aaron?
Sure, I sure can. This one is called Curve. Move, meant to direct energy away from a straight line. Potential, inertia, building up, arching, aching, flexing, waxing. Round. There you have it.
Okay. We were looking for the downbeat or something.
It was an upbeat.
It didn't have that musical accompaniment. That's where we missed.
Well, you know, I'm planning on having some music playing in the background. I programmed some jazz, and I hope to cover all the jazz bases, what people like.
Well, you've got your own CD, though, too, don't you?
I'm working on my second one, the first one, Philosophy, that was produced by my partner, David, for Dos Osos Productions, is available through my website, www.2osos.com. And we're working on the second one. We're getting the studio upgraded and revamping the webpage. And
can people hear clips on that site?
Yes, they can hear some clips of the newest single, which is it escapes you right now. But go to the website. It's there. www.2osos.com. At the end of my rope. That's
right.
The name of the song.
Okay. So let's recap. You're going to be at Bering and James Gallery.
That's right.
And when is it?
It's going to be Friday, October the 20th, from 6 to 9, and 805 Road Place, Suite 500, and it's free. And it's going to be coffee and cheesecake. Need I say more?
You got some special guests, too.
I have some special guests. I'm Kim Pickens, Phil Smith, Sarah Crowder, Thomas Blanton, Charles Harvey, Stelena Villarreal.
Now we're going to have you come by in person real soon in the future to do some more of this.
Thank you. Thank you. I'd love to do that. I'm a ham.
Really?
Now, you, Aaron, you've been around for quite a while in poetry. Give us a little bit of your history.
Well, I started writing in high school, and I was writing archaically, and my English professor told me, no, write like you are talking to people. And so I started doing that, and wound up working with Cable Access Houston with John Monning on his show Video Radio as an associate producer, and we wrote a soap opera, Black Coffee, and two of the cast members, Donna Howell DePue and her husband, Dave Howell DePue, had a cast party, and I don't know what possessed me. I went over there and read some of my poetry, and they said, oh, you got to get out there. And I said, get out where? They said, get out and read. And I read for a year, and they said, we don't know anything about birthing a book, but we're going to birth your book. And they were my publishers.
Oh, that's great. That's
great. For my first book of poetry, A Little Aaron Coolery.
Now, you can get one of your first CD is at your website.
And
yes.
We're working on the second one.
Working on the second. When is it going to be out?
I'm hoping, give me February.
February. Okay, you've got till February.
You let us know when it comes out.
Absolutely. You got to come back before then and give us some excerpts of it.
I'll give you an update. I'll give you the release, the new release from it.
Great.
All right.
Well, I appreciate this opportunity to talk to the community and to get my message out there. And everybody, come out! It's gonna be a happening time, baby.
Thank you, Aaron.
Thank you, Aaron.
You're listening to Queer Voices.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
In the open air, and they bike ride with their windblown hair, so preoccupied and so unaware of it all. All these incredible men of the world seem so friendly, though we've never met. They all want me, they just don't know it yet, so they won't holding the net when I fall. Just look at the way they do as they please, seizing the day with such masculine ease, and chiseled physique that's making me sigh, sneaking a peek as they pass me by. Every desirable man in the world is out, and they're having fun, and they're glorified by the midday sun without having tried, exciting everyone by it all. They're the most wonderful, thrilling, romantic, adventurous, beautiful man in the world. Thank you.
spectacular man in the world is right here, right in front of me. They're in no fear, for they've no cause to be. And it's so clear, love comes so easily to them all. All these impeccable men of the world, they have no clue, as I timidly drift, just what I could do. If I could make the shift, I'd do what they do with their incredible gift to enthrall. Just spending the day inside of their shoes and having your way with whomever you choose. Then ending the day in somebody's skin and letting them play in the skin you're in. Predictable man in the world is outside in the open air. They multiplied and now they're everywhere. It's intensified how much they just don't care about it all. They're the most cruel and despicable, arrogant, self-centered, and egotistical, dumb and impervious, shamefully typical and unavailable, beautiful men in the world.
And that was very nice. That was David Gerlin, a cabaret artist from New York, singing Every Beautiful Man in the World. And anytime you listeners have questions about the music we play, you can email me at qmheritage@AOL.com. That reminds me of my QMH show next
That's
week.
That's right. What is scheduled for next week, J.D.?
Well, for the second hour next week is my monthly kind of music history documentary entertainment show, and I've got two really candid interviews with artists with a lot of history. The first is Ellen Seeling, who is now director of the Montclair Women's Big Band. In the 80s and 90s, she was in the group Deuce, a jazz fusion band. And in the 70s, she played with the historic band Isis, one of the first all-women's rock bands. She's got a lot of history, and she makes some very candid remarks about, I guess, musical struggles through the year. And that theme was kind of carried on by my second interview with Steve Cohen, a Philadelphia singer-songwriter, sings very out music, and you'll judge from the interview that sometimes he's not convinced that if that was the really the correct career path that he should have taken, because it's hard to get your music out there if you're singing openly queer stuff.
So. Absolutely. And don't you have another interview next week?
Yes. Those two are on Queer Music Heritage. Before that starts, we've got a phone interview with Trett Fury, who women's music fans will know is one of the leading artists, and she also was in a relationship with women's idol Chris Williamson for a while. She's got a lot of music on her own, and I'm excited about that. What else?
Well, let's say thank you to those people who were here tonight.
Charmin Petrie.
Charmin Petrie.
Houston Women's Festival.
Yes, the Pride Band is having their Spooked on Classics October 19th.
We thank Carla Landry for that.
Absolutely. And then, of course, Aaron Coleman, our last interview. And Ellie, your interview, who was that?
That was Nadine. That was Nadine with her magazine, Suhaq. And
there won't be a quiz.
No, there won't be a quiz. That's okay. Also, just a reminder that next Monday begins early voting, so all of you get out there to vote. If you have a question concerning who the Houston GLBT Political Caucus PAC endorsed, you can go to their website at hglbtpc.org, and it's listed there. And I think that pretty much wraps everything up, doesn't it?
Thank you for listening to Queer Voices.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Valensky.
And Elisar Saliba.
Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude.
Here, calling all phone volunteers and wannabes. We need 3 to 6 people per shift, 2 to 3 hours each, to answer phones for KPFT's Fall Pledge Drive. And you'll get more than great conversation out of the deal. You'll also get a free meal donated by one of several local restaurants. Phone trainings are scheduled for Tuesday, October 17th at 6 p.m. and Saturday, October 21st at 10 a.m. Just sign up for the training at kpft.org, then show up at the station on the day you choose. If you are an experienced phone volunteer and would like to schedule a shift, please email volunteer at kpft.org or call 713-526-4000. Wannabes, join in the fun. But first, you are required to attend one of the scheduled training sessions. Donations of time by KPFT listeners are a major part of what keeps the station alive. Thanks for all you do for KPFT Houston.
Here at KPFT, your vote matters most. Now here's a word from one of our candidates.
I am Susan Young, candidate for the KPFT Local Station Board. I have served on the KPFT Board for the last 3 years, 2 as chair. I have been active on many committees, and I played a significant role in...
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.